You know, ever since we started doing these deep dives, there's this one request that just keeps popping up, and honestly, I'm pretty pumped to finally tackle it. Botticelli's Primavera. It's a big one.
Oh, a classic. And one that always gets people talking, that's for sure.
Right. I mean, everyone's seen it, but the second you try to figure out what it means, talk about a rabbit hole. No pressure, though,
But
right?
that's where the real fun begins, don't you think?
No.
Peeling back those layers of meaning.
Absolutely. Okay, so best place to start is, well, the beginning. You see Primavera for the first time. What's your first reaction? What jumps out at you?
It's almost like stepping into a dream, you know? You've got this lush, vibrant garden, these figures that seem like they just walked out of a Greek myth, and this incredible sense of movement, even though everyone's just frozen there.
Totally. Like Botticelli threw a garden party and invited every god and goddess he could think of. You know what gets me, though? It doesn't really feel like a party, does it? Like these figures, they're all kind of dot off in their own world. Not a lot of eye contact happening in this scene.
That's a really interesting observation, actually. And to understand why that is, we need to think about the bigger picture. Botticelli was working during the Italian Renaissance, which was this time of incredible artistic and intellectual change. But even then, to have a painting this big and focused on mythology like this, that was a bold move.
Really? I just figured back then everybody was painting gods and goddesses left and right.
Not so fast. Religious themes were still the main focus for a lot of artists. So for Botticelli to create something this grand and focus it on, well, this, it was definitely a statement, pushing boundaries, you know, playing with new ideas.
So we've got him breaking the rules with what he's painting, and then how he's actually portraying these figures is breaking the mold too. It's like he's trying to tell us something, but in this really coded way.
Exactly. And that's part of what makes Primavera so captivating. It's like this puzzle he's presenting. We've got Zephyr, the god of the west wind, who seems to be abducting this nymph, Chloris. But she's changing into Flora, the goddess of flowers, as it happens. And then there's Venus right in the middle. But is she blessing everyone or just watching? And then you've got Mercury way over there, totally ignoring everyone, just staring into space.
It's like Botticelli is playing a prank on us. Like, here's a party where no one's allowed to make eye contact. Have fun figuring that out.
And yet, those choices he made, as strange as they might seem, they make us ask questions, right? Why are these figures so disconnected? What's he trying to say with these, or the lack of them?
It's like he gave us all the pieces but forgot to tell us how they fit together. And then there are all these little details, like the looks on their faces. Those are clues too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Just look at Flora, for instance. She's looking straight out at us, and there's this knowing, almost mischievous little smile on her face. It's a tiny detail, but it's so unusual for art from that time. Most artists, they wanted everyone to look serene, you know, almost emotionless. But Botticelli gives Flora this playful little smirk. It makes you wonder what she's thinking, what she knows that we don't.
I am getting serious art history chills right now. This is why I love a good deep dive. You start with a simple question and wham, down the rabbit hole we go. Mythology, symbolism, mystery. Botticelli knew what he was doing.
Okay, so we've got this mysterious garden party, these figures who seem to be in their own little worlds. It's all very intriguing, but there's got to be a reason, right? Like, what was Botticelli trying to say with Primavera? What are the big theories out there?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And it's one that art historians have been going back and forth on for, well, centuries. I mean, there's no one definitive answer, which is part of what makes it so fascinating. But the most common interpretation, it's that Primavera is an allegory for the arrival of spring, the Earth's fertility,
Yeah.
that whole idea.
So like a visual ode to springtime, but with a few extra layers of symbolism thrown in for good measure. Exactly. It's more than just pretty flowers, right? It's about the cycle of life, death, and rebirth. These powerful forces of nature that are at play. And if you kind of walk through the painting from right to left, you can start to see how those layers unfold.
Lead the way, I'm right behind you.
Okay, so we start with Zephyr, the west wind. He represents that shift in seasons, you know. That raw energy of nature that's kind of unpredictable. He's chasing after Chloris, this nymph of springtime, but as he does, she's literally transforming into Flora, the goddess of flowers. It's like you're watching spring burst into being right in front of you.
So it's not just that it's spring, it's the whole process of becoming spring, of nature coming back to life after winter.
Precisely. And then, right there in the center, you've got Venus. Now, you might think, oh, Venus, goddess of love, hearts and flowers, right? But in the context of Primavera, she takes on this broader meaning. She's not just about romance, but also the symbol of the fertile energy of nature itself, this life force that makes all this growth and renewal possible.
Okay, Mother Nature is definitely the guest of honor at this party. Speaking of which, can we talk about all the plants for a second? Botticelli did not hold back. This isn't just a few daisies scattered around. It's like a full-on botanical garden exploded on the canvas.
You're telling me it would have been so easy just to paint some generic flowers and call it a day, right?
Yeah.
But Botticelli...
No, he was meticulous. He put over 500 different species of plants in Primavera, over 130 that botanists can identify down to the genus. He actually consulted with experts to get it right. That's serious plant knowledge. Wait, seriously, he wasn't messing around, was he? He was all about accuracy. Got to get the petal count right.
Exactly. And that actually tells us something really interesting about how people thought about the natural world back then during the Renaissance. It was this time of rediscovering nature, celebrating it. Those plants, they weren't just decoration for Botticelli. They were symbols of abundance, this generative power of nature.
Okay, so we've got this beautiful celebration of springtime, this crazy attention to detail. But it's a Renaissance masterpiece, so I'm guessing there's even more going on beneath the surface. Am I right?
You are so right. To really get what Botticelli is doing here, we have to talk about Neoplatonism.
Neoplatonism. That's ringing a very distant bell from art history class. Maybe a little refresher is in order.
Of course. So Neoplatonism was this philosophical system that was all the rage during the Renaissance. It basically combined ancient Greek philosophy with Christian ideas. And one of their core beliefs was that you could find glimpses of the divine, this higher realm, through beauty here on Earth.
So, like, gazing upon a masterpiece could bring you closer to God. I can get behind that.
Exactly. It's this idea of moving from the physical to the spiritual. And that's where Venus comes back into play.
Wait, more Venus? I thought we were done with her.
Oh, we're just getting started. See, for the Neoplatonists, Venus wasn't just about, well, you know, earthly pleasures. She represented this dual nature. So yeah, you've got Venus, the goddess of beauty, desire, all that. But you've also got Venus as a symbol of divine love, spiritual aspiration. And that duality is really important for understanding Primavera.
Okay, I think I'm starting to see it. So Primavera isn't just about how awesome springtime is. It's using spring as this metaphor for something way bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Something about humans yearning for a connection to, well, something bigger than ourselves.
Exactly. And it gets even more interesting. There are even connections to the Virgin Mary, which might seem a little surprising at first.
Wait, Venus and the Virgin Mary, how do those two connect?
Well, look at how Botticelli frames Venus. Those trees behind her almost create this archway, right? That type of framing was something artists used a lot when depicting the Virgin Mary in Renaissance art. They'd put her in these architectural niches or surround her with a halo. It's visually very similar.
So he's visually linking these two figures, even though they come from completely different traditions. Sneaky.
Exactly. Both Venus and Mary, in their own ways, represent a purity, beauty, and this idea of love as a path to the divine. It's this really subtle but powerful connection that adds this whole other layer of meaning to the painting.
Okay, I'm so in over my head right now, but loving every minute of it. We've got springtime, we've got Greek gods and goddesses, Neoplatonism, the Virgin Mary. Botticelli really went all out. But we can't forget about the Medicis. They were basically running the show in Florence. And something tells me they weren't shy about seeing their influence, you know, worked into a masterpiece or two.
Oh, the Medicis. Yeah, you can't really talk about art in Renaissance Florence without mentioning them, can you? And you're right, they were huge patrons of the arts. And Botticelli, he was one of their absolute favorites.
So all those oranges we see in Primavera, those aren't just like randomly placed fruit, are they?
Not even close. Orange trees. Those were a symbol of the Medici family. They actually had these golden balls, a lot like oranges, on their coat of arms. It was Botticelli's way of slipping them into the picture. Little shout out to the folks funding the whole thing.
A secret message in plain sight. I knew those oranges were up to something. But it gets better, right? I've heard there might be even more hidden Medici symbols in Primavera.
Oh, you have no idea. If you look closely at the background, you'll see laurel trees and the laurel. Total symbol of Lorenzo de Medici, Lorenzo the Magnificent. And get this, the flames on Venus's and Mercury's clothes. Those are thought to be a nod to St. Lawrence, or as they'd say in Italian, Lorenzo. We're talking about a commissioned piece here. So weaving in those little details, that would have definitely pleased the Medicis.
It's like Botticelli is sending them a message in code. Hey, Medicis, I see you. You're important. And look, I put you right there in my masterpiece. Very clever, Botticelli. Very clever. Which actually makes me wonder, do we know for sure who commissioned this thing? Like, who was Botticelli making Primavera for?
Well, that's where it gets a little tricky. It's always been connected to the Medicis. But pinning down the exact details of how it was commissioned, that's something art historians are still debating.
Okay, but what do they think they know? Give me the details.
So in 1975, there was this big discovery, a Medici family inventory from 1499. And it specifically mentions Primavera. It actually lists it as belonging to a man named Lorenzo di Pierfrancesco de' Medici.
Lorenzo di Pierfrancesco. So not the Lorenzo de' Medici, but a relative.
Exactly. Lorenzo the Magnificent's cousin. And apparently Primavera was hanging out in Lorenzo di Pierfrancesco's city palace in Florence, right alongside another famous Botticelli, Pallas and the Centaur.
So did he commission it? Or could it have been like a gift?
That is the million-dollar question. Mm. A lot of art historians believe Primavera was a wedding gift for Lorenzo di Pierfrancesco. He got married in 1482 to a woman named Semiramide Appiani, and there's this whole theory that some of the figures in the painting might actually represent them.
Hold on, seriously. You're telling me that on top of everything else, the symbolism, the hidden messages Botticelli might have snuck in actual portraits of real people into the scene? Now that is juicy. Tell me everything.
Yeah. It's a theory that's gained a lot of traction. Some folks think Mercury, all dressed up with that faraway look, might actually be Lorenzo di Pierfrancesco.
Mm-hmm.
And Flora, with her flower crown, her graceful pose, maybe Semiramide Appiani. Of course, we don't have definitive proof, so it's all speculation. But still, it's pretty cool to think about.
This is like a Renaissance-era game of Where's Waldo? Only instead of finding a guy in a striped shirt, we're hunting for hidden portraits. Love it. And it really makes you wonder what other secrets Primavera is keeping, you know?
That's what I love about a work like this. It makes you curious. Makes you want to look closer, to ask those questions, to come up with your own interpretations. It's like this ongoing conversation, a puzzle that we might never fully solve.
And some of the best conversations are the ones that leave you wanting more, right? I don't know about you, but after all this, I need to go stare at Primavera for like a week. And for everyone listening, here's a little homework assignment. When you're done with this episode, go online, look up Primavera. I'm serious. See those colors, those details, knowing everything we've talked about? Botticelli will never look the same, I promise.
You've got that right.
Yeah.
It's like a reminder that true masterpieces never really stop revealing themselves. Every time we come back to them, we see something new, something that challenges us, that teaches us more about the world and ourselves.
Couldn't said it better myself. Until next time, happy art sleuthing, everyone.